Cause that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, January 23rd edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, Kentucky wins another SEC snoozer in a conference that is quickly becoming unwatchable. We told you so on the highest-ranked team to lose over the weekend. One SEC team gets royally screwed on the road. The Super Bowl matchup is set. And we have a college basketball pick tonight that sounds a lot like a college basketball pick we had for Saturday night. So let's go.
You are listening live.
Kentucky 85, South Carolina 69. Kentucky wins and covers in a game where Kentucky had their third lowest scoring output of the season, which is amazing when you think that a college basketball team today, in today's game, would score 85 points and it would be one of their lowest efforts. By the way, the two teams that held them to less than 85, Louisville and Michigan State, and of course we know what happened in the Louisville game. But this was another game in which Kentucky started off favored. They were the home team. The analytics nerds at ESPN said the lowest probability that Kentucky had to win at any point during the game was 89.4%, and that was when the game tipped off. Most valuable player, once again, Malik Monk, 27 points, 9 of 14 shooting. By the way, Isaac Humphreys, 10 minutes, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 blocks. We think this guy should be playing a little more. He's not. But we still think by the numbers, he has a lot of bang for his buck, especially in his limited playing time. Isaiah Briscoe played horribly. 29 minutes, 0 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 7 turnovers, and 4 fouls. You wonder why this kid can't be trusted on a game-to-game basis? Because he throws in clunkers like this more often than you think. But Kentucky survives. They are now undefeated in the SEC. 7-0. It's amazing to think that Kentucky's already played 7 conference games, but here they sit, 17-2 overall, 7-0 in the conference, and a road trip down to Knoxville, Tennessee tomorrow night. A game in which De'Aaron Fox may or may not be ready to play in. Nobody seems to know as of Monday morning, so your guess is good as mine. And we'll have more on the Kentucky game against Tennessee in tomorrow's show. But the buzz going around the SEC right now, and the Courier-Journal had an article on this today, is that SEC basketball games are becoming unwatchable. And mainly because these games are so defensive-oriented. If you look at the Ken Pomeroy efficiency ratings, the SEC has 5 of the top 26 teams in the country in defense. And it just so happens that those 5 teams are the best teams in the conference. Kentucky, South Carolina, Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. But if you look at these teams offensively, those top teams, Kentucky and Florida can get it done offensively. But look at South Carolina, 169th in offense. Alabama, 192. Georgia, 111. Those are your top 5 teams. They can't score. They can stop you from scoring, but they can't score themselves. And other than Kentucky, the SEC doesn't have one team ranked in the top 30 in offensive efficiency. And if you look at Ken Pomeroy's conference ratings, the SEC is the 5th best conference behind the Big 12, ACC, Big East, and the Big 10. And they're ahead of the Pac-12. Pac-12 has Arizona, Oregon, UCLA, all 3 ranked teams, all 3 locks to get the NCAA tournament, and probably get a very high seed. In games decided by 4 points or less, or that go to overtime, the SEC has only 6 out of 47 that fit that bill. Of all the conferences, that ranks 28th, and there's only 32 conferences in the country. So a lot of these games are blowouts. Maybe not these spectacular 95-65 type blowouts, but more like 68-50, something of that nature. But the SEC, right now, fighting a huge stereotype basketball-wise. Because not only does everybody think it's a football conference, and most of these schools definitely focus on football before basketball, but then you throw a product on the floor that's as ugly to the naked eye as most SEC teams are throwing out there right now, and then you have backlash. And especially when everybody's complaining in the SEC about foul calls and how many fouls there's been in the league. So right now, to sit here and say the SEC is one of the top five basketball leagues in America, not many people are going to say that, but the numbers say they are. Even though according to Joe Lunardi's latest bracketology that came out today, the SEC is a four-bid conference. He has Kentucky as a one seed, Florida as a six seed, South Carolina as a seven seed, and Arkansas still in as a nine seed. So it's not like they're one of the last eight teams in. Lunardi also has Georgia as one of the first four out. So is the SEC really that bad in basketball this year? No, they're not that bad, because the numbers tell us they're not. But if you watch it with the human eye, it's not very aesthetically pleasing whatsoever. Especially these Kentucky games that get out of hand early, and the referees seem to want to blow the whistle a lot more often than they should. But if you look at this SEC, you look at the bottom of the conference, LSU 1-6 in the league, Missouri 0-6 in the league, and LSU's only win in the conference is against Missouri, those two teams should play a best of seven just to get into the SEC tournament. Because you're sitting there with two coaches, Johnny Jones and Kim Anderson. First of all, never trust a coach with a female first name, Kim Anderson. Missouri's only lost 10 in a row, no big deal. But LSU, that has squandered so much talent over the years, and especially last year when they couldn't even make the NCAA tournament with the number one pick in the NBA draft, they've lost 7 of 8, the only freebie being they got to play Missouri. If Johnny Jones, the coach of LSU, if he still has a job next year, it's like Eric Dickerson said about Jeff Fisher. Where's the naked pictures? Because he's got to have something on somebody. There's no way Johnny Jones should be coaching. He should have been fired after last year, to be quite honest with you. And this is his fifth season in Baton Rouge, and he made the tournament one time, because he sure as hell is not going to make it this year. So if I'm you, Johnny Jones, save your money and get your resume ready, because there is no way you're coaching that team next year, because you do not deserve to.
T.Chill, UNITY.
Other college basketball over the weekend. We sat here on Friday and told you UCLA is one of the biggest frauds in college basketball. What did they do? They went out and got beat at home to Arizona. UCLA, you talk about defense and how you defense wins games the later you go in the season. UCLA now ranked 125 in the nation in defensive efficiency. That's not going to win you very many games, especially in the tournament. So I hope UCLA starts winning games. That way, when they get to the tournament, they'll be way overvalued. And you can find it's a lot easier to make a few dollars going against them. But like we said Friday, UCLA was a number one seed on Friday morning. Today, Joe Lunardi has UCLA as a three seed and trending down. That's a lot closer to the truth to what UCLA should be. But this is not a team that's going to win the Pac-10 or the Pac-12. I can promise you that. So when you're filling out your bracket in March, and you see UCLA, and you think to yourself, ooh, I remember when they came to Kentucky and won. Just remember, Kentucky's a fraud on defense too. And they played right into UCLA's hands.
Your mama's so stupid. I told her it was chilly outside. She went and grabbed a spoon.
The other fraud that we were talking about on Friday, Gonzaga, remains undefeated. But a game that we picked correct against the point spread Saturday night. Oh, and by the way, we went 3-0 against the point spread Saturday night. And if you want to hear more about Gonzaga and their shortcomings, stay tuned for the end of this show, because they play tonight. And not only do they play tonight, but they play the same team they played Saturday night on Monday night. And we have a strong opinion on that game.
Your mama's so stupid. She was filling out a job application and said sign here. She put Sagittarius.
Speaking of the SEC, Texas A&M got a gift win from Georgia on Saturday. A game in which Georgia had the game won, was up by double digits late in the game, somehow got down by 1 point, had the ball to try to win on the last possession, and somehow the clock at Texas A&M stopped. And you can see the Georgia point guard with the ball look up at the clock to see how much time's left, and it was frozen in time at 5.6 seconds. So he took his time, passed it to another man who got fouled, but the referees deemed that if the clock had kept running, that the play would have happened after the buzzer. So they called the game over. If I'm Georgia, I'm raising holy hell. Because all you have to do if you're the home team, just start screwing around the clock late in the game, and you'll screw up the players, and then the refs will come over and see what it really should be. That's just dumb. That was a complete screw job by A&M over Georgia. Now, granted, they needed that win bad because A&M, with that win, that screw job win, now they're only 2-5 in the SEC. If they had lost that one, they'd be 1-6 down there with LSU. And Lord knows you don't want to be down there. And I'll promise you this, Georgia is a fringe tournament team, as we just talked about with Joe Lunardi. They're one of the last four out. If they get to the end and they're still one of the last four out, they will look at this game and regret the last 2 or 3 minutes of this game where they had one and completely let it get away and let the timekeeper at A&M screw them out of a chance to win.
Your mama's so fat, she wakes up in sections.
The underground don't stop for hoes.
Ah, the Duke faithful are in good spirits. Duke was down to Miami at 11 points at halftime on Saturday night, and Jeff Capel, thinking he's the new Coach K, benches Grayson Allen and Luke Kennard and Harry Giles, arguably his best three players, and then Duke comes out second half and goes on a 31-4 run. Now, Jeff Capel is the next Coach K, and Duke is as good as they've ever been, right? Let's not get carried away. I'll believe it when I see it from this Duke team, because as heavily touted as they were in the preseason, I still haven't seen it. I still haven't seen all those freshmen play full-time, and now I don't even see Coach K on the sidelines. Wake me when it's March and they're all supposedly hitting on all cylinders.
You take the fun out of beating you because you have an excuse to lose.
Get a life, dude.
Do you think it's possible that your mom won't love you anymore if she sees how bad you're losing in the game?
Shut up!
One of our favorite sabermetric teams, West Virginia, lost two games last week, including over the weekend at Kansas State. That followed a shocking home loss to Oklahoma, one of the worst teams in the Big 12 so far this year. But was it a case of looking ahead? Who does West Virginia play tomorrow night? Kansas. And we told you last Tuesday that next Tuesday, West Virginia would take down Kansas. And not only do we still feel the same way, but the fact that West Virginia has lost their last two games makes us feel even better about it. Because you think they're going to walk in there not pissed off at the world tomorrow night after two embarrassing losses and on national TV against the number two team in the nation? You're darn right they will. We'll get this out tomorrow, but I can tell you right now. Upset special. West Virginia takes down Kansas tomorrow night. And oh, by the way, could Kansas be looking forward to Kentucky this weekend? Who knows? But we'll discuss this tomorrow. But a sneak preview of tomorrow's show, West Virginia will beat Kansas.
Still plenty of time for Kansas.
No! And Bucknell has pulled the upset.
Eastern Kentucky at Moorhead played over the weekend, both in women's and men's basketball at Moorhead. The women's game was played first, and Moorhead won 80-54. Then they followed up with the men's game, and Moorhead won 80-54. Same score, same location, not a misprint. I think we can easily say Moorhead's basketball program is about 26 points better than Eastern's, both men and women. But what are the odds of that happening? How much could you get in Vegas on that one? Oh, wait, they don't put women's basketball on the board out there. Sorry, that's why we don't talk about it.
Vanderbilt, a one-point lead. 1 second, got it at the buzzer! And 13-seeded Murray State has pulled off the opening round shocker.
One of my favorite teams in the 1980s was Georgetown. John Thompson, Patrick Ewing, Hoya Paranoia. I was pissed off the night they lost to North Carolina on that Michael Jordan shot in 1982. I was pissed off the night Villanova played weak basketball and only took 9 shots in the second half and beat Georgetown at Rupp Arena in 1985. But times have changed for Georgetown basketball. Yes, they got to the Final Four about 10 years ago under John Thompson III now. But since then, it's been a lot of dark days. And if you throw out games against St. John's and DePaul in the Big East, and those are the two lower dregs of the Big East, Georgetown has lost 16 consecutive Big East games. They're sitting at 10-10 and 1-6 in their conference. But they're not the only traditional power down this year. Connecticut is terrible. They're out of the tournament. Even Michigan State lost over the weekend. They're now 12-8, 4-3 in the Big Ten. Michigan State pretty much has to win out to make the tournament. As easy as it is to go by the top 20 rankings in college basketball in the preseason and predict the tournament teams, this year, a lot of those preseason ranked teams not only are floundering, but are in big danger of missing the tournament. Georgetown, Michigan State, UConn, right at the top of that list.
Michigan State never led in this game. Middle Tennessee's had the lead the whole way. That's it. The Blue Raiders of Middle Tennessee, a 15 seed, has won it, and they are moving on.
By the way, have you been to Japan lately? Well, if you have and you're from around here, you'll be happy to know that there's a University of Kentucky-themed restaurant in Japan. However, keep in mind that there's no beer cheese or Ale 8-1 on the menu, which will drive a lot of you away, I'm sure. However, they do have bourbon on the menu, because as we all know, Japan loves their bourbon. So next time you're in Japan, of course, look for the University of Kentucky-themed restaurant. That has to be. There has to be, like, no offense to the people here, there has to be, like, tumbleweeds going through that place. Or it's about the size of a closet. Really? A University of Kentucky-themed restaurant? Do you think we have any sports team from Japan? Do you think Sadahara Oh, the old home run hitter, do you think he'd have a restaurant over here? How about Ichiro? Is there an Ichiro restaurant here? Unbelievable. Only University of Kentucky.
I got you an outfielder. He used to play with the Giants.
Yes, sir!
And so Hiroshi Kamikaze Tanaka, recently of the Tokyo Giants, knocks himself cold for the second time this week. Maybe in Japan, that's actually better than catching the ball. Personally, I think he's just trying to get out of the lineup.
NFL, the Falcons and the Patriots will face off in Super Bowl 51 in 2 weeks. Yes, it'll be the most boring 2 weeks of your sports year because you'll have to hear stories about all this Super Bowl stuff for 2 weeks. The Patriots won. Brady makes his 7th Super Bowl, if you can believe that. The Patriots, there were people saying if Brady had lost this game, it was the end of the Tom Brady era in New England. That's how crazy some people are when it comes to this stuff. Best play of the game, though, was the Patriots radio announcer holding up a sign and starting a chant about "Where's Roger?" at the end of the game, referring to Roger Goodell and the Patriots' absolute hatred of him for Deflategate. But the Steelers got off to a bad start at about 3 o'clock in the morning because some clown came into their hotel and pulled the fire alarm. That man was arrested. I'm sure the Patriots will bail him out of jail. That being said, apparently the Patriots do this to every team that comes to town. That doesn't shock me at all. There was more Patriots news that the Patriots are trying to trade their backup quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo, for a first-round draft pick. And why wouldn't they? Because if the Patriots win this Super Bowl, you could just go ahead and chalk up Tom Brady, best quarterback of all time, in any list that will ever be prepared again. He'll be better than Peyton Manning. He'll be better than Montana. He'll be better than everybody. Because you can't beat 5 Super Bowl rings and the numbers he's put up.
Now, I see some elements of Red Rover with a little bit of Spud mixed in. And is anyone ever going to blow a raspberry on the quarterback's belly?
No, Stewie, that never happens.
Down goes Brady. And it looks like Williams is pulling up his shirt and having a little fun with his tummy.
Look, he's doing it.
Falcons won in the last game ever at the Georgia Dome last night. Julio Jones, or as my friend says, Julio Jones, with a big day. I remember being in Atlanta during the Michael Vick fiasco. I remember when Bobby Petrino left town. That was 2007. In 2008, Petrino had just left. Michael Vick was in prison for drowning and electrocuting dogs. And the Falcons moved on from Mike Vick and took Matt Ryan as the 3rd overall selection in the draft. And a lot of people were saying at the time that he wasn't worth the 3rd overall selection in the draft, but the Falcons were so desperate for a quarterback, they had to take him that early. Flash forward 9 years, now you've got the MVP of the league just making his first Super Bowl. But it's so good to hear that Tom Brady and Matt Ryan often text each other regularly throughout the season because they have so much respect for each other. Sure they do. I'm absolutely sure that they have so much respect for each other. Aaron Rodgers, the losing quarterback in Atlanta, complained after the game that they didn't win enough games and they had to play too many games on the road in the playoffs, and that's why they lost. Okay. I seem to remember the Giants going to the Green Bay several times and taking down the Packers, but I digress. Good news for the Falcons, though. Kyle Shanahan, their offensive coordinator, apparently leaving town as soon as the Super Bowl is over to go to San Francisco. Their new offensive coordinator, maybe Chip Kelly. Talk about some controversy in Atlanta. That won't go over very well at all, I can promise you. But the playoffs are finally almost over. There's been 10 games in the playoffs. One great game, Green Bay and Dallas. One pretty good game, Kansas City and Pittsburgh, and 8 clunker games, that were decided before the fourth quarter started. ESPN today reported that ticket prices way down for this Super Bowl, and I can promise you that Fox did not want to see Atlanta make this Super Bowl, because Atlanta certainly not the national attraction that a team like Green Bay would be. The line on the Super Bowl, Falcons are a 3-point underdog. The over-under is 59.5. That's the highest number in the history of the Super Bowl. But how many people really thought the Falcons were going to make the Super Bowl? In the preseason, out in Las Vegas, there were more future bets on the Cleveland Browns to win the Super Bowl than the Atlanta Falcons. Let that sink in for a minute. By the way, if you didn't look, Cleveland finished 1-15 this year. Just saying.
Hey, Mo, you want to come with me and Wally to the Super Bowl?
Oh, absolutely. My favorite team's in it. The Atlanta Falcons. Yeah, ever since I was a boy, I've always loved the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, they're good, but I wouldn't count out the Denver Broncos.
But who had the Falcons winning the Super Bowl before the season? The Madden video game had them winning the Super Bowl before the season. Maybe we should be playing more Madden. I simulated the league on Tecmo Bowl before the season, and the Los Angeles Raiders won with Bo Jackson getting over 5,000 yards rushing.
Okay, we all know how much Cleveland loves Tecmo Bowl, so let's start playing. I'm the Raiders. I'm Bo Jackson. And hopefully he'll show up.
That's no fair. Bo Jackson's too fast.
Guys, do we want Cleveland back or don't? Oh, here we go. I see. I see. A touchdown! Yay! I won the game. Now I'm going to jump. Bo Jackson!
Ryan Grigson of the Colts, the general manager of the Colts, is now the former general manager of the Colts because he was fired yesterday, prompting the Colts punter, Pat McAfee, to respond on Twitter by saying, thank God, and eviscerated Grigson for the apparent jerk that he is, bringing out an old Big Blue Nation favorite, Dan Dockich, who took exception to Mr. McAfee, and they had an epic Twitter war that I can't even describe here on this show. But it came out that Ryan Grigson and their coach, Chuck Pagano, actually hired a therapist to help them with their work relationship because they hated each other so much. Yeah, either one or both of these guys should have been fired a long time ago. And if you're going to fire your GM, why did you wait a month after the season ended? You couldn't do that the next day, Black Monday? Typical Colts.
So we put on a clinic with QB Eagles.
Gave him QB.
I have no idea. Just a smackdown.
NBA. Yesterday was the 11-year anniversary of Kobe Bryant's 81-point game when he was playing for the Lakers. And how did the Lakers celebrate that? They went out and lost to the Dallas Mavericks by 49 points. The worst loss in the history of the Lakers franchise. It's bad enough you lost by 49, but you didn't lose to the Warriors or the Spurs or the Cavs. You lost to Dallas, one of the worst teams in the league. That's terrible. Dallas is 15-29 now on the season, and you lose to that team by 49 points? Yeah, you can make up all the cliches about teams that just don't show up. The Lakers didn't show up last night, that's for sure.
Boom, shakalaka!
Jabari Parker did not play in last night's game with the Milwaukee Bucks, simply because he spoke out to the media about a players-only team meeting, breaking apparently one of the team rules in their little kangaroo court, so the players voted that Parker would not be able to play because of it. Milwaukee Bucks, one game out of a playoff spot. You really want to be suspending some of your best players just so you can prove a point? Oh, but we've got plenty of games left. Well, you know what? A game in the middle of January counts just as much as game number 82. It counts one game. Think about that. And props for Jabari Parker. If he was speaking his mind, what's wrong with that? Apparently the Bucks still live by the snitches get stitches rules. A flawed concept in itself.
He's heating up. He's on fire.
Well, DeMarcus Cousins at it again. The Kings apparently got screwed over by the refs on Saturday night. And in response, after the game, DeMarcus Cousins applauded to the media and said that the referees are great and we love them so much and they're doing a great job. You talk about a guy who's lost his mind. This guy's lost his mind. You know what he's like? He's like remember in school, elementary school or middle school, you knew that teacher who had a kid and that kid knew he could get away with everything. So he just pushed people to the limits because he knew he was never going to get in trouble, as opposed to all the other kids who were just there by themselves. DeMarcus Cousins, talented, knows he can get away with anything, but as long as that happens, he's never going to grow as a player, or his team is never going to win ball games. In Sacramento at 16-27, you have to wonder, how long are they going to keep this up?
And here they come over the midcourt line. Shapow! He turns it over in crosstown traffic.
But hold on, it looks like he's going to rob the bank shot.
Bad news for you longtime watchers of ESPN. The Sunday morning show called The Sports Reporters is going to be canceled in May. Dick Shapp hosted that show for 15 years until he passed away. And then John Saunders hosted that show until he passed away last year. 30 years ago, this was a pretty cool show. But now, there's 100 shows on television like this one. And the people on those shows are slightly more likable than people like Mike Lupica and Bill Conlon. Who's Bill Conlon, you ask? Well, if you watched this show 30 years ago, you know him as an old curmudgeon from Philadelphia who, first of all, didn't vote for Nolan Ryan for the Hall of Fame because he thought he wasn't good enough. Nolan Ryan, the man who struck out more players than any player in the history of Major League Baseball. No big deal. But apparently that wasn't good enough for the Hall of Fame. And then it came out later that that old guy was abusing children all the way back to the 70s. Now, he passed away a few years ago, but it just goes to show you, even these highfalutin journalists have backstories and skeletons in their closet. We love people bitter to the end. That's the wrong kind of bitter. But The Sports Reporters was a great show in the late 80s and early 90s. But after that, that hasn't been appointment viewing for 20 years now. And to be honest, probably should have been canceled a long time ago.
ESPN is the worldwide leader in sports. They're also the worldwide leader in airing the same show 15 times a day.
Speaking of things that are from times gone by, do you remember the movie Jerry Maguire? Yes, you do. Show me the money. Everybody remember that because every loser in the world said that phrase for about 3 months. There's a video store in Los Angeles that still has 14,000 copies of the VHS tape for the Jerry Maguire movie. So what are they doing? Not only are they selling these tapes, they're renting them out, still trying to make money off of them. You remember 20 years ago when every time a great movie came out on VHS, they were all listed at the front of the store and you had to get them? I kept Best Buy in business buying a lot of those VHS tapes. Sadly, those days are gone. But if you live in Los Angeles, you can get out there right now and get your hands on one of 14,000 of them. By the way, how do you have a surplus of 14,000 Jerry Maguire tapes? That had to be a fatal mistake by somebody somewhere. No wonder there's one store devoted only to Jerry Maguire now. And no, I'm not gonna give you the "you had me at hello" and the "who's coming with me" lines. Well, maybe I just did.
Oh, this is the worst looking hat I ever saw. Well, you buy a hat like this, I'll bet you get a free bowl of soup, huh? Oh, it looks good on you though.
I want winners.
Greed is good.
What I need.
And now with his picks for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, Smooth Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver! Yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, Mac Daddy Stogie time. We are on fire right now with our picks. A documented 3-0 on Saturday. And now our dogs against the spread picks of the year, 63.6%. given out on this show. And our upset specials, 64.3% given out on this show. So if you've been listening to these picks, first of all, bless your heart, a loyal friend and true. Second of all, you're making some serious money right now because our picks have been on fire since the start of the year. And we have one more pick for tonight. On Saturday night, Portland was a 32.5-point underdog to Gonzaga. We were all over Portland because simply, all we had seen on ESPN for the previous 48 hours was Jay Billis and all the ESPN talking heads kissing Gonzaga's undefeated butt. And we said 30-plus points was simply too many points to give up. So now, they returned the favor, and now they're playing at Portland tonight. Kind of like one of those NBA home-and-homes, although this game is simply a makeup of a rescheduled game because of weather earlier this month. As of this taping, Gonzaga, a 24-point favorite. 65% of the money on this one has already gone to Gonzaga. Apparently, people did not learn their lesson from Saturday night. Before the game Saturday, Gonzaga had covered 10 games in a row, yet another reason why we liked Portland. So now their last 11, Gonzaga's still 10-1. And on the year, Gonzaga 13-3 against the spread, poor little Portland 7-8. But Portland kind of hung tough with Gonzaga on Saturday night. Gonzaga won the first half by 11 points, won the second half by 10 points. That's a 21-point win at Gonzaga. Now you're going to make me give up 24 when they flip locations and go to Portland. Blind logic. Give me Portland again. You're going to give me 24 points in Portland against Gonzaga? I'll take it again, and I'll take your money again. Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. I saw this same thing Saturday night, and I'm going to pounce on it again tonight. Portland plus 24 against Gonzaga. Your Mac Daddy Stogie of the night, and you can take that bad boy to the desert and smoke it.
All right, folks, let's talk right now. I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will blow this man out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners.
And that does it for the Monday, January 23rd edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. As always, we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. Email anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Facebook, the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.